The rise in secularism. Secularism can mean different things to different people, but studies show that people in the United States and other parts of the world are becoming less religious. But why? I'm Keith Shortall. Today we'll explore what secularism really means and why it appears to be on the rise in the U.S. and in Maine. We'll also look at what it means to be atheist versus agnostic, and how even people who don't believe in God can discover their spiritual selves in a community with believers of multiple faiths. And we'll explore societal views on atheism in a country in which a significant percentage of people believe that atheists should not be allowed to run for president. And as always, we want to hear from you, the trend towards secularism, today on Maine Calling. First, this news. From the Maine Public Radio studios, I'm Keith Shortall, and this is Maine Calling. Secularism is not necessarily the rejection of religion. So what is it? Well, we'll talk about that and about why secularism is on the rise. We'll also explore what it looks like here in Maine. Joining me in the studio, Professor Elizabeth Pritchard. She's an associate professor of religion and chair of the religion department at Bowdoin College. She teaches courses on modern Christianity, gender, and secularization. The Reverend Christina Solari. She's a minister for the First Parish in Portland, a Unitarian Universalist congregation. And Nathan Grant. He's a community leader with Maine Atheists and Humanists. As always, we want to hear from you. Do you consider yourself a secularist or humanist? And why do you think our society is becoming less religious? What would you like to say about that? Our phone number is 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. Welcome, everybody, to Maine Calling. We'll get to the definition of secular in a moment. But, Nathan, I want to start with you with a definition of a couple of the words that are in the title of your organization, which is atheists and humanists. What's the difference?
Sure. An atheist is someone who has no affirmed belief in a supernatural deity. Or they don't believe there is sufficient evidence to warrant that belief. And that is the definition of an atheist. A lot of people think of it as someone who believes they have objective evidence or positive evidence for non-belief, but they don't necessarily. You can just merely not think there's enough evidence for a supernatural being, and you are an atheist.
That sounds like my understanding of what an agnostic might be.
Yes, and so some people have a more agnostic atheism. The word agnostic, meaning to not know, opposite of agnostic in the Greek. And then atheist being, so there's two separate answers to different questions, whether one's an atheist or an agnostic or some sort of combination. You can be a Gnostic atheist or you can be an agnostic atheist, which describes the vast majority of people who do not believe in a supernatural deity. Those are people who do not think there's sufficient evidence. That's all that's required. And a humanist is just a broad worldview. It's a combination of many philosophies where we believe that humans have agency and we understand the world through reason. And that's our guide for morality.
Okay. Then let's get to the third one, which is secularism. How would you define that?
Sure. Secularism is sort of a belief in having a society where the rule of law and is not governed by a particular religion or faith-based concept, but rather through logic, reason, evidence, and empathetic morality. We have, for example, a secular government. There's no mention of God in the U.S. Constitution, and we prefer to have a society where government is neutral in the dictates and endorsements of religion.
Professor Elizabeth Pritchard, when we talk about secularism being on the rise, what does that mean?
Well, that's a great question. I first would like to just start by talking about what we understand by the secular. The secular is derived from Latin terms meaning worldly or of an age, and thus they have to do with time. And so when we talk about secularization in everyday context, we generally mean one of two things. First, the idea is that with the rise of modernity, religion declines. However, that's actually become a fairly controversial thesis. And second, we're talking about the arrangements whereby religion is distinguished from and in some cases separated out from other sectors such as the economy, education, and of course the state. So really, secularization pertains to these changes in the role, resources, and relative authority of religion in modern societies. Secularism, on the other hand, as I understand it, entails, on the one hand, an affirmation of this world with all its limits and possibilities, and may also involve advocating for the diminishment of religion in society. And so that's the advocacy that I'm hearing Nathan talk about.
Christina Solari, I'm sure you have this conversation from time to time about the secularization of America or of the West. What's your opening take on this in the context of how you welcome in your church people of all beliefs, including non-belief?
For me, religion isn't necessarily our religion. Unitarian Universalism is not about the divine. It's about finding the sacred in everyday life. So it's about creating meaning from our secular experience in a secular world.
And it's hard to paint with a broad brush, but people coming to your church, what are they looking for that they haven't been able to find in either the religion they grew up with or in their own personal explorations of spirituality?
That's a really good question. Many are looking for community, to be connected to other people, for friendship, and many are looking for justice work. How can we as human beings help others? And many are looking for a way to process their own journey as a human being and how to make meaning beyond their own personal beliefs and thoughts. So I would say a lot of people in my congregation are on a journey, although there are some people who identify as Christian, as atheist, as religious humanist, as Buddhist. And the beauty of our work together is, how do we do the work of loving each other and creating a world of peace together with all our different beliefs?
Mm-hmm. Nathan, the premise of the show is that secularism is on the rise. Is it, as from your experience, from what you've seen in the growth of your organization or otherwise, all the studies that you have read? And I guess the second big question, obviously, then, is why?
That's a great question. Mm-hmm. And I don't pretend to have all of the answers to those questions. But I do see secularism as on the rise, not only in the nation as a whole, but globally. And so Maine has consistently ranked as one of the least religious states in the Union, according to the Pew Religious Landscape Survey. Many people might not know that about Maine. But we've also seen the rise of religion in places like on the continent of Europe, where we have some very secular states, such as Sweden or Estonia or the Netherlands. And so it is definitely on the rise, and we do see that increase and I can't quote numbers right now, in the younger demographics, the 18 to 29-year-old demographic especially.
Yeah, and we'll get to that and what's happening maybe with millennials, Elizabeth Pritchard, but what's your take on whether, in fact, secularization is happening at an accelerated rate? Because it was, after all, it was 50 years ago that Time magazine asked the question, is God dead? We were thinking about this. We've been thinking about this for decades. Mm-hmm. But what's changing now?
Right. What you do have is, or what Pew is reporting, right, is that you're having higher numbers of persons in the United States who are not religiously affiliated, right? The number's getting up to about 30%. But at the same time, people are reporting, in fact, like something like 90% of Americans claim to believe in a higher power. Now, that could mean in some ways that America is in some ways inching toward a kind of European model that's been described by some scholars as kind of this believing but not belonging, right? That people have various convictions about higher powers and the divine. 6 in 10 Americans apparently believe in some kind of spiritual power and energies that can be emitted from various from objects as well as other regions. And so they believe but not belong. They don't really want to commit themselves on a weekly basis, say, to going to various services or to having longstanding commitments. That, you know, it could be the case that that's also happening in the United States context. But America remains fairly significantly more religious than, say, Europe does. And in fact, many scholars have kind of wondered about this, that America, even with its material prosperity, because there's been a correlation between material prosperity and declining religion or secularization, whereas America has this material prosperity, but you still have significantly high rates of religious affiliation. So why is it that the U.S. is a religious outlier? And that's been something that's really kind of vexed the field to some extent. Some scholars have reported that America provides a fairly robust competitive market in religion. Others have argued that
Can you explain that a little bit more?
Sure. This idea that because there's so many choices on offer, that churches and religious communities are kind of seeking, right, followers, and they'll kind of do all kinds of things in order to attract them. Whether or not, like in the case in Maine, for instance, our first megachurch, East Point Christian Church, right, has indoor soccer fields, playgrounds, in this kind of way to kind of win people over, right? And so there's a sense that America has kind of built this robust competitive market. Others argue that in the United States that you have a significant amount of existential insecurity. In other words, people might feel materially fairly well off or comfortable, but still have this sense of vulnerability or a precariousness that they turn to religion in order to solve. And so that's the way that some scholars have kind of tried to figure out what's going on in the United States.
Yeah. Christina, short of the soccer fields and the big screen TVs, does that describe some of the people that are coming through your doors?
Yeah, I think people that are coming to our doors are looking for a place to belong in throughout their lives. So, you know, some place that the various rituals and life stages that one goes through, that there's a community of support in that process, and that they're not alone, and they are seeking a way to understand life, this crazy world that we're living in.
Nathan, is there a similar place for atheists?
Well, the Maine Atheists and Humanists group is a statewide group, and we provide a forum for atheists and secular humanists to have discussions in a safe place, without any judgment or evangelizing. So it's kind of it's a community. And some of our members go to the Unitarian Universalist Church, and some prefer to stay within our community or local groups that we kind of provide an umbrella for.
But is it hard to become unified around not believing in something?
No.
Well, I describe it as kind of with when you have someone heard the term like atheist only describes a lack of belief. Otherwise, we come from many different walks of life, people from both of the major political parties, people who have widely varying philosophies of life. And the only thing that really unifies us is that lack of belief, and that we may have family members or friends who evangelize to us, and we just want a space to get away from that and provide support for each other. The other thing that brings us together is when people in government who have strong faith-based beliefs try to push their dictates onto us. And then that really rallies our community together. And we form alliances, actually, with groups like the Unitarian Universalists, like and other faith-based groups, in order to try to push back against some of that encroachment of religious dogmas and doctrines into public life.
So there's a call to action in that case. You've got a public policy goal to achieve there, and separation of church and state or whatever it is. But do you think that there are larger numbers of atheists who simply remain private about it, quiet, and don't seek to join, and in fact might even be reluctant to admit it to people close to them?
That's exactly right, Keith. There are a lot of people who do not feel like attaching themselves with the A word, as I sometimes call it. They don't want to attach themselves to that because of the stigma associated with it. There are still many groups in our society that do not accept atheists or secular humanists, such as the Boy Scouts of America or the Freemasons. And many people have been discriminated against in their jobs or in housing. Now, in Maine, we're not that religious of a state, so it's better here than it is in some parts of the country. But we still have a community because there is somewhat of a common threat to our community.
I'd like to jump in. I remember a few years back, I preached a sermon on atheism. And after the service, people came up to me thanking me. It was as if they were coming out of the closet.
And is that, Elizabeth Pritchard, there's reasons for that because the pressures are very real. I read one study that said upwards of 30% of Americans or something believe that atheists should not be allowed to run for president.
Right.
So these are very visceral, strong feelings.
Well, that's why I think you have to be really careful of talking about increasing secularism in the United States context. Even if we're finding that people are moving away from affiliation with religious organizations, I think we have to acknowledge the kind of incredible presence and influence of religion in our public life and the sense of pressure, right, that someone can't really admit in some ways to having or to being an atheist. So I think that's why I'm always kind of cautious about these claims that we're seeing secularism on the rise, because it really depends on how you define religion and making sure that in some ways we're not just talking about, individual people saying, I believe this or I don't believe that, or what is the church with which I'm affiliated, but really what are the public policy discussions going around on and how it is that religions have some influence in those.
And it appears that some of this pressure on atheists is just cultural and historical and whatever. But there's also this belief somehow that Nathan, that atheists somehow lack the moral foundations that believers have. And I'll ask you whether that's been your experience, but also wondering if atheists maybe have not done as good a job at presenting like a science-based moral structure.
I think there's a lot of well poisoning that goes on there, Keith. There's people who want to believe that atheists are immoral, and so therefore they do. Or maybe they've been always taught that from the time they were young. If you look back to ancient classical antiquity, a lot of people back then used reason and logic and empathy as their guides to morality. In secular humanism, we take out the supernatural aspect of that, but we're not less moral. We share many of the same values as people in faith-based communities. And many of those people use very similar secular moral reasoning in their everyday lives.
I think I just want to jump in there, is that if you look at a couple of fairly recent Supreme Court cases, there certainly is a tendency for the justices themselves to speak about the conscience of religious people. And I do think there's a tendency here in the U.S. to think that somehow religious persons in some ways have kind of a claim to having consciences or being worried about their conscience and not allowing for the fact that people who are not religious or people's sense of themselves in terms of their gender identity, their sexuality, their reproductive choices, all of those are a reflection of conscience. But there's kind of a default in, I think, even in the Supreme Court decision-making whereby somehow religious people are seeing us as needing their conscience protected, right, in the law. And I do find that troubling.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, your questions and comments. The number is 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do Andrucki & King. Featuring Judy Andrucki, providing private mediation services in matters of family law. AndruckiLaw.com. And Evergreen Home Performance, offering energy-efficient windows and insulation to help homeowners achieve year-round comfort. More at evergreenyourhome.com.
Arizona Senator Martha McSally is the latest female vet to reveal she was raped by a superior officer. Then the system failed her.
I was horrified at how my attempt to share generally my experiences were handled. I almost separated from the Air Force at 18 years. Over my despair.
Now, more women are filing formal complaints. That story this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
All Things Considered is today at 4 here on Maine Public Radio. Ongoing annual member support makes Maine Public possible. Your contribution to Maine Public through your will or estate plan can also provide long-term support for programming. If you would like more information to become a member of the Tower Society, talk to your financial advisor, or contact Maine Public at 800-884-1717 and ask to speak to Scott Marshallden. That's 800-884-1717 and Scott Marshallden. Thank you for considering supporting Maine Public in this way.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Keith Shortall. Today on the program, Understanding Secularism. Joining me in the studio, Christina Solari, Unitarian Universalist Minister for First Parish in Portland, Nathan Grant, a community leader with Maine Atheists and Humanists, and Elizabeth Pritchard, Associate Professor of Religion at Bowdoin College. We invite you to join the conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. Let's go to the phones. We'll go to, let's bring in Andrew, who's calling us from New Brunswick. Hi, Andrew. Welcome to the program.
There.
Yeah, go ahead, please.
Well, I just wanted to say that I think that religious affiliation aside, whether you're a person of faith, whether you're a person who doesn't believe, you're atheist, I think that governments going secular is something that has to happen. And as being an outsider looking in, I live in a border community along the United States-Canada border. And so we pay quite a bit of attention as to what's happening politically over on the other side. And I have to say, when you listen to the political discourse in Canada, very rarely is God mentioned or evoked. And many times we may not even know the religious affiliation of the people who are representing us in government, because it rarely ever gets mentioned during election seasons.
Yeah.
And I think that Americans are overly preoccupied with this notion of, well, does this person have religious values, moral values? And I can attest to the fact that I know people who claim to be religious who are people that are the least trustworthy in society. Just because you claim to be a person of faith doesn't mean that you hold true to those values. And quite often in politics, we see that that's a fact. I think the truth of the matter is, when I look at Republican and Democratic parties in Canada, I'd be willing to bet my life on the fact that a good majority of them are liars. None of them have a religious bone in their body. Mm. And they're just placating to the voter base who are religious.
Yeah, Andrew, thank you very much. So he raises an interesting point that's reflected also. Elaine is on Facebook and writes, religion wouldn't be the focus of such acrimony if its practitioners focused more on good works than on politics. The two do not blend well. That's sort of the other side of that. But how has the sort of political discourse bringing in religion, the importance of faith in elections, how has that affected both? That is, the politics and the view of religion.
Sure. I mean, the difficulty is, right, when people introduce religious convictions, there's always a tendency, right, then to divide the populace, right, and to kind of speak past each other, or to have people, draw on sources that people just aren't familiar with. And so I take the caller to be insisting, right, that government needs to kind of be this kind of neutral umpire, right, that's able to rise above these different or conflicting religious notions. I think there's some validity to that point. I think at the same time, I think it's also important, right, that we maintain a fairly robust public sphere and allow people to speak about all kinds of alternative visions or hopes for the future. So I certainly wouldn't want to completely shut down the presence of religious speech in public, but I do think we can have some serious, more sophisticated discussions about the role of religion in public life and to what extent it can be amplify the public sphere, and to what extent it, in some ways, becomes one that contracts it or becomes exclusive and conflictual. I will add just quickly, too, there's a lot of work being done, too, on the way in which the quote-unquote government or nation state itself becomes, in some sense, a kind of religion. When you think about nationalism, and think about the fact that people are asked oftentimes to sacrifice their lives toward the nation state. And so I don't think we want to presume, for instance, right, that governments are somehow assuredly secular in our current context.
Mm-hmm. Any other thoughts on that point? We're going to move to another call.
I just want to let people know that the atheist community, atheist and secular humanist community, does not have any hostility toward religion. You know, I realize that some people want that structure in their life. They want that for it to provide them with meaning. But what we really want is, as Elizabeth was saying, is to have a neutrality of government when it comes to decisions that government has to make.
But there have been atheists who've been aggressively after religion. You know, Christopher Hitchens, we all know them.
God is not great.
Yeah, yeah. So there is that sector of the atheist community.
Sure, it exists, but it's sort of like there are many sectors of the Christian community. There are many different worldviews that are mixed in there.
Let's go to Angie in Kittery. Hi, Angie. Welcome to the program.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. What I wanted to say is I just believe that there is too much religion in politics today. We need to get back to running the government as a government and stop pandering to the church and various religious views. There's too many religions made to do that. There's too much religious money getting into politics, which is tending to sway views. And I just don't think it's right.
All right. Angie, thank you. Any thoughts from the panel? All right. Appreciate the call. Let's go to James in Fayette. Hi, James.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to say a little bit about the idea of atheists and whether or not they have any morality. I myself am an atheist and have been for most of my life. And I would like to say that I feel that in some ways I may be a more moral person than many people I know who profess to be practicing Christians, in part because I feel like I don't need any, you know, promise of a heavenly reward or a hellish punishment to behave in a good fashion. I believe that, good works are their own rewards. That's basically what I have to say.
Yeah. James, if you're still there, I wonder if you'd comment on the stigma that we were talking about for atheists. Have you felt reluctant to talk about your beliefs in public or in any setting because of fear of scrutiny?
Well, that's a good question. I have never really been eager to talk about it in group settings. Unless it seems, maybe an appropriate academic setting, perhaps. But I have had discussions, one-on-one with people, sometimes with people who are a very strong faith, just to help them understand where I'm coming from as opposed to where they're coming from and why we see things differently. But, I talk about it with my family and my friends if they want to, but I certainly, don't force it upon anyone or go about writing books like Christopher Hitchens does.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. Thanks so much for joining us. Let's take another call. Another James, who is calling from Portland. Hi, James. Welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I appreciate the show and all the viewpoints that you guys express. And I'd just like to extend a couple of notions your way. First, as atheism, as a belief system, right, it tends to sway in the direction of, well, I don't believe that there's a God, and I don't believe that, this is real, is still in and of itself a belief, right? And I do, and I'd like to, I guess, extend to your panel the idea that, could an atheist take certain teachings from, say, some of the Greek philosophers, all the philosophers over time, the Abrahamic faiths, and things of that nature, what would your view on the value of certain lessons, right, like the Ten Commandments? I think they're pretty self-explanatory, things of that nature. So, how would you, value those sort of teachings?
All right, so, James, yeah, thank you.
So are you kind of asking what kind of authorities that atheists or humanists draw on in making their or fashioning a moral framework? Is that your question?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, it comes down to the individual, right? I think individual in any sect of religion or belief system is going to put their own individual spin on it anyway. So I guess I would ask, you know, you guys specifically, you folks on the panel there, like, what would your take on those notions be?
In our faith, we have no religious dogma or creed. What we have is seven principles. And those principles are value-based. And the first one is honoring the inherent worth and dignity of all people. The last one is honoring the interconnected web of existence, which you can take in many ways. A lot of people think of that as the earth and being in right relationship with the earth. But that's the atheists in my congregation or within Unitarian Universalism, and I'm sure within the humanist organizations and groups, those seven principles that we have are values that we live our lives with, and they're not easy. But I think if you read those, you would be like, yes, those are values. And it sounds like you're talking about people having values, a moral compass to navigate their lives with that aren't necessarily religious.
Right. Well, actually, can I ask a question about that, though? When you start out with your first principle where you talk about inherent dignity, and this is the same language we'd say like with the Declaration of Human Rights, would you not say that in some ways that's an acknowledgement in some ways of the sacredness of humanity?
Yes.
Okay. And so there is kind of an element of transcendence there.
Well, I think of it that way, mm-hmm. personally, but I don't think all Unitarian Universalists would necessarily think of it that way, but yes.
Okay, so there's a sense of a necessity for some sort of fundamental kind of sacredness.
Yes, okay. of being human and mm-hmm. of the earth.
Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Nathan James also makes this point that atheism is a belief in and of itself,
right.
And more than just disbelief in this sort of divine spirit or whatever. You do believe, though, that the answers to life and to happiness and to a functioning society can be found in science and through the individual. And in other words, there is a set of beliefs to atheism.
Sure. Anytime you make an affirmation, you have a belief. So atheism is more of a lack of belief, though. We think of things in terms of philosophical positivism when it comes to that sort of thing. What that means is that we don't believe that we see, atheists don't see enough positive evidence to subscribe to a belief in a supernatural deity. So that is how we come to our conclusions. It's the same type of philosophical underpinnings in science, that if there's not enough positive evidence that little blue men live inside the planet Venus, that we cannot say that little blue men live inside the planet Venus. It's the same as saying no little blue men live there at all.
Let's go to, before the break here, we'll go to Bart, who's calling from Wayne. Hi, Bart.
Hi.
Yeah, go ahead.
I just wanted to point out how atheism likes to preach itself as into religion in general, when, from my experience, when I've talked to atheists, they're mostly concerned with Christians, right? They have a vitriol towards Christianity and Christians and churches in general. You know, nothing from them about Islamic mosques, nothing about them from government handouts to Israel, to Jewish temples, etc. So I just wanted to point that out.
But doesn't it have to do with the kind of, particularly in the American context, the kind of cultural dominance of Christianity, for one? And are you suggesting in some ways that Christians are kind of a persecuted minority because of very, atheists
so
tend to be critical of Christians?
So Christianity is becoming a global minority.
Oh.
Islam is overtaking Christianity on a global level. So in that sense, yes, Christians are a minority.
It's not a minority when you're talking about a third of the population of the world.
Well, yes, if you select for a tiny population of the world, then yes, you can get your data.
Bart, okay, I'm sorry, we've lost your phone. Nathan, did you want to respond here? Or?
Sure. I think that Elizabeth is right. It does have to do with the context of the United States being a nation comprised mostly of Christians. There are definitely Muslim atheists. They're apostates. They're usually looked down upon. It's much worse often in the Muslim world to be an atheist than it is here in the United States or in Europe. but they definitely exist, and some of them are actually well-known figures.
All right, we're going to take another quick break. When we come back, more of your questions and comments, the number 1-800-399-3566. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do New England Cancer Specialists. 50 years of working toward better outcomes for Maine patients. Learn more at newenglandcancerspecialists.org. And Hurricane Island, integrating science education, applied research, and leadership development now and for the future. Learn more at hurricaneisland.net. On the next Speaking in Maine, the Xi Vision and U.S.-China relations, a new era in need of new ideas.
Attempting to ignore China or to wish it away will change us.
Robert Daly is the director of the Kissinger Institute on China and the United States at the Woodrow Wilson Center in Washington. Elizabeth Economy is a CV Star Senior Fellow and Director for Asia Studies at the Council on Foreign Relations. That's coming up on Speaking in Maine, Thursday afternoon at 2 on Maine Public Radio. Starting at 4:30 each weekday evening, Maine Public Television brings you 3.5 hours of in-depth quality public affairs programming. First, at 4:30 each afternoon, it's Amanpour and Company, delving into the top issues of the day, followed by The Journal by Deutsche Welle at 5:30, with an international and European focus on world events and issues. Next comes the BBC World News at 6, then the Nightly Business Report at 6:30, and finally, the PBS NewsHour at 7. 4:30 to 8 each weekday evening, news you can trust on Maine Public Television.
Welcome back. I'm Keith Shortall. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, we're talking about secularism. Here with me, Nathan Grant with Maine Atheists and Humanists, Elizabeth Pritchard with the Department of Religion at Bowdoin College, and Christina Solari, a Unitarian Universalist minister. Join the conversation. The number is 1-800-399-3566. I read in preparation for the show one statistic that 68% of atheists are men and 78% are white. Mm-hmm. Does that just have to do, again, with the numbers that we're starting with, but also maybe greater pressures on African Americans or other non-white populations to not be atheist?
Right. I don't know if that's pressures to not be atheist as much as in part it might be a reflection, as I mentioned before, about seeking other resources and other access to leadership in a context in which they may not have a voice. And so religion becomes an opportunity that way. And I also think that, and this is certainly the case with Maine, when you have an increasing diversification of population, we're finding kind of some increasing variety of religious communities. For instance, you've got the Wat Sam Ki Cambodian Buddhist Temple in Buxton, Maine. You have a Hindu temple that's now in a vacant Universalist church on the Scarborough South Buxton line in Maine. They have several mosques. So in many cases, right, if we're talking about celebrating diversity, right, then we're going to really have to consider the role that religion plays in that diversity and the way that it allows groups to maintain identity, to build relationships of support, and to provide kind of safety nets in a context of racist oppression.
I'd like to comment on that as far as the number of white people, especially who I self-identify as atheist. It's a lot harder in a close-knit community like the African-American community to come out as a non-believer. And this isn't just my speaking out of turn. There is someone who's white himself, even though you can't see that on the radio. There are other organizations out there and other research and literature that point that out. There's an organization nationally called Black Nonbelievers. For anyone who's listening who might be interested in checking out that organization. I just recently read a book by Dr. Dwight Evans called The Emancipation of a Black Atheist, which was about his coming to his own non-belief through actually reading and researching people of African descent who had come to non-belief, rather than the traditional white folks like Daniel Dennett or Christopher Hitchens.
Yeah. Let's go to Steph in Portland, who believes that we've veered away from our original conversation. Steph, bring us back, if you would, please.
Oh, yeah. Hi.
Hi.
I was thinking, yeah, that what's happening with the panel is typically what I see happens. You know, the function that religion plays is that we involve our egos too much and we go into our courts. So the conversation has already become, what's atheism? What's Unitarian Universalism? Mm-hmm. What do we do? What do you guys do? The caller calls up and he's, you know. So the thing is that I feel like religion these days, with people becoming more and more informed and understanding what it means to be human, we have, you know, we don't really have a need for religion so much anymore. What we need to do is look at our egos and see, you know, why we need that.
Okay. Christine, I'll go to you first.
Oh, thank you. I love what you just said. On some level, the purpose for me, the purpose of all religion is to help us get to our true self, our essential self, our ego-less self. And yeah.
But Steph's point is we don't need religion to do that anymore.
We don't. I think that religion can help one do that.
Go ahead.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. I just wanted to comment on that some people in the secular community, the atheist secular community and secular humanist community, will use, in order to find ourselves and to find inner peace and the awe and wonder within ourselves, go toward a secular version of meditation. So whether that's through guided meditations or meditation apps, that's one way that we do it, just that some of the listeners might have an understanding of our inner spiritual lives.
But Elizabeth,
hold on. Yeah. He said inner spiritual life.
Yeah.
So that's another thing that hasn't come up is the difference between religion and spirituality.
Well, actually, okay, then I find students often like, in my experience, students really do like to maybe say, yes, I'm spiritual but not religious. And so I'm taking it that you're kind of agreeing with that there's something kind of more positive about spirituality, is that right? Religion is associated, right, with dogma or institutions, with hierarchy, and so, but spirituality is free and individual. So is that what you're partly getting at?
Myself, yes, spirituality for a secular atheist type of, or secular humanist individual takes out the supernatural aspect of it. But spiritual to us, I mean, like, we breathe air, but air, you know, the root word of spiritus is breath, but air in the scientific terms is still, no matter how thinly, composed of matter. We still are grounded in a lack of belief in spirituality, but also in science. But we do find value in exercises or in rituals that might enhance our well-being, that might make us have more inner peace, or that might provide us with a sense of awe and wonder about the world.
Mm. Yeah, I like the idea of this secular mysticism. So looking for the mystical in the secular world or in just ordinary reality with, mm-hmm. you know, being human, you know, the ocean, the stars, falling in love.
Right. Yeah. And all of that's really kind of coincident with this idea that in the context of the secular, we don't really have simply a diminishment of religion, right? We have religion altering, right? It's becoming more flexible, more varied. People are kind of constructing kind of more hybrid identities, borrowing from different traditions. Some of that can sometimes make various traditions fairly unhappy, right? When people kind of appropriate elements and then combine it the way that they wish. But I think, again, it speaks to the complexity of this whole category, the secular. I'd be interested, too, in hearing what people kind of think about. We have an upcoming Supreme Court case I think it's Bladenburg, Maryland, where you have a 40-foot cross, right? That's a war memorial from World War I. People are starting to talk about which way the Supreme Court will go, but it raises an issue, right, about religious symbols in the public sphere. It is on public land. It's maintained with public money. We could also ask the question about the tremendous tax exemptions, right, that religious groups get in the United States. So, you know, we could talk again about a secular government, but how is it that we religious groups are able to, not contribute to, in some sense, right, those public support.
All right, let's take a call here. We'll go to David in Bucksport. Hi, David.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Gosh, the conversation has been so diverse and all over the place. I've got comments on just about everything I've heard, but I'll I'll pare it down to something that was just brought up, which is, when we start giving public space over to giving more credence to any specific faith, that's where the problem comes in. We are a secular society, and I celebrate my atheism mostly through my secular humanism, which makes me feel connected as a global citizen, which is how I define my values and ethics. When I see any community put a religious symbol on a public square, that tells me that that is somehow a less than subtle endorsement of a particular religion that immediately oppresses anybody else in that community who is trying to survive at an equal level, operate in the daily market, and not feel like there is some one religion that has been specifically pointed out as the better one or the best one in that particular community. So that's the problem that we will continue to address. I mean, we have a nativity set in Bucksport that's set up every holiday season, and it remains on the public square well into March, when they finally will take the stable down and move all the characters inside into the public storage. You know, it's stored at the public expense, it's put up at the public expense, and there's a clear message every holiday season that Bucksport puts up their Christian nativity scene. I'm offended as an atheist. So those are the things that, Nathan, earlier you said that there's always an attempt to not be hostile in our interaction with religious people. As an atheist, I don't have any hostile aggression, but I'm often put in the position of having to have a hostile response when, as a gay person, I watch time and time again throughout the nation when it's Christian churches who will come to the campaign financing of all of the legislative initiatives that are put forth to promote equality, justice, and fairness for the LGBT community. And in California, for Proposition 8, it was the Mormon Church that funded the fight against equality for lesbian and gay same-sex marriage. Nationwide, it was the Christian Church, various denominations, Catholics predominantly, that went out of their way in a very political and non-religious way to work against the rights of citizens in this country. So I, as a gay man, have to have somewhat of a hostile response to say that has to stop. When I go to Augusta to the State House, I don't like seeing a lobbyist from the Catholic Church buttonholing all of the elected officials to hear the Catholic perspective on legislation that they are weighing in a secular hall of government.
Yeah. All right. David, thank you. Did you?
Well, I just want to – I so appreciate what you're saying and agree with you. I just do want to say, though, that we've been saying that the United States is a secular nation or something like that, and it's not. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It really isn't. I mean, everybody gets Christmas off. That's a Christian holiday. I just feel that we're still a Christian nation.
I'd just like to comment on that. The caller's mentioning that nativity scene and some of the things that he faces. I don't see it personally as hostile toward religion to tell them no when it comes to putting themselves into the public sphere or having a nativity scene paid for with taxpayer dollars or injecting themselves into our schools in such a way that it's almost an endorsement of their particular faith perspective. So that's not hostility to me.
So you're vigilant, but you're not offended.
Right. I'm offended when it goes, because if it goes against the Constitution, just as we might be offended if somebody in town robbed a bank. I don't see that as the role of government to inject themselves into faith-based matters that way, unless they're going to be very even-handed about it or educational about it. It is not the role of government to choose sides when it comes to religions. And I think we have a lot of allies in that respect who recognize that they don't want to see in the faith-based community, we have allies who don't want to see one religion dominate because they recognize that is not good for a pluralistic society.
Let's go to Kevin in Orono. Kevin, you've about 20 seconds.
All right. I was just trying to call to talk about the comment, what was said earlier about atheists being against Christians specifically. Mm-hmm. And I don't think it's really against Christians. It's really about a religious fundamentalist trying to get power in the government. And as you mentioned, in the United States, it's Christians who have the power government. And that is what the problem is.
All right. Well done in 20 seconds. And you were sort of fading out there. But any final thoughts here that, Nathan, that you want the audience to know about secularization or atheism that they may not understand?
Yeah, the only thing I can think of that I would like to make sure that people know is that people who are atheist or secular humanists are not the enemy. We have very much the similar values to anyone in faith communities, and we're not really that different. And I would like encourage people to learn more about it and maybe ask us questions.
Yeah. Christina?
I would just invite people to think about their everyday lives and notice what is sacred in their everyday lives.
Yeah. Elizabeth?
I think we can all agree that what we really want to do is promote a fairly robust public sphere, and we are really wary of any attempt to kind of dominate that space or to exclude people from that space. And it's really unfortunate, right, when people use religion to authorize that very move to exclude people from that space.
All right. Elizabeth, Christina, Nathan, thank you all for being here today. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And thanks to all who called. Professor Elizabeth Pritchard, Associate Professor of Religion and Chair of the Religion Department at Bowdoin College. Reverend Christina Solari, Minister for First Parish in Portland, a Unitarian Universalist congregation. And Nathan Grant, Community Leader with Maine Atheists and Humanists. Lucy Suchek ran the board today. You can find past editions of Maine Calling as well as helpful links and resources by visiting mainecalling.org. Today's show will be rebroadcast again tonight at 8 o'clock. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. Tomorrow on the program, join host Jennifer Rooks for a conversation about the race for the White House. I'm Keith Shortall. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.